This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about books and the publishing industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today, I'm talking to Brooke Warner. She's a founder and publisher at She Writes Press, but also is herself a writer, has been an editor, and is pretty busy in the book business. How are you, Brooke?
I'm well, David. Thank you.
Oh, good. I'm really glad to have you on. And we, you know, we're going to talk about a variety of different things, but maybe you could, you know, just start us off by giving the brief personal biography that you would like out there as part of this.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. I'll say a word about my publishing history. I started in book publishing in 2000, and I worked for a small publisher here in Berkeley, where I still live, North Atlantic Books. And I was there for about 5 years before I moved on to Seal Press, which is a women's press, which was originally founded in Seattle, but moved down to the Bay Area. And I ended up as the executive editor at Seal Press. And I was there for 8 years, mainly involved in acquisitions, doing what most editors at houses do, which is to bring in projects and developmentally edit and shepherd projects along. And it was around the last 2 or 3 years at Seal Press that I noticed a real change in the industry. I mean, it had been changing already, but the shift for me was that I had been working at this very passion-driven press that was often publishing books to fit its list, feminist titles, books that needed to be published. And because we had been acquired a number of times, and the last acquisition I was part of was by Perseus, now Seal Press has been acquired by Hachette, as of this year. And the mandate was very different coming from corporate publishing. It was more about the big book and the author platform and author brand. And it was upsetting to me because that just wasn't the publishing that I had gotten into. And so I started to envision a press where author brand and author platform weren't the driving decisions around acquisitions, and where authors could have a chance to publish because the barriers to entry for traditional publishing are just getting so high for the average author who has a really good book that maybe 10 years ago would have been acquired just based on its merit. And that's no longer the case. So that was the founding principle behind She Writes Press. And I launched it exactly 4 years ago, co-founded it with Kami Wyckoff, who is the founder of SheWrites.com. And we came onto the scene in June 2012 with this mandate to publish books by women, to support women's voices, but that, again, was not going to be author brand driven or about author platform, but simply on the merit of the book. And we have really found a niche. It's exploded. It's been far more popular than I really ever could have imagined it would be. And we are 4 years in and 200 authors signed as of last month. And, you know, we vet the project. So that's an important thing. We can talk more about that later. But, you know, so in terms of the number of submissions that we're getting, it's probably well over thousands at this point. And so it just shows the need in publishing to be creating different models. And we call what we're doing hybrid publishing.
Right. And so, let's talk about that, because the term, I think, now has a couple of different meanings. There's, and sometimes they get conflated. The hybrid author is someone who publishes both with traditional commercial publishers, where the, you know, where the author is paid a royalty, and the publisher obviously finances the publication and marketing of the book, but also publishes sometimes as a self-publishing, that is to say, self-financing author. And but a hybrid publisher is something different. So maybe you should define what I think, you know, I think I know what a hybrid publisher is, but I'd love to have your definition of it for anybody who's listening.
Yeah, and you're right. The terminology is really complicated. And other terms that people have used for this same thing that we're doing is co-publishing, partnership publishing. For me, hybrid works because it means the combination of two different things. And so that's really what I feel like we're doing. We're taking the best of traditional publishing and the best of self-publishing, and we're combining those to create a hybrid model. So anyone who's on the hybrid scale, in my opinion, falls somewhere between self-publishing and traditional publishing. We happen to be, I think, more on the traditional publishing side because of what we offer and because we have both vetting and traditional distribution. And there aren't really any measures right now that qualify what makes a hybrid publishing company, which I think is another problem that we hybrids have right now. But we're not traditional publishing because the author pays. So it's an author subsidized model. But in so many ways, we're not a vanity press in every way. In fact, I mean, we qualify to submit our reviews traditionally. We have exposure in, bookstores. We pre-sell onto Amazon and into bookstores and libraries. So there's just so many ways in which we're functioning exactly like a traditional publisher. And so, and yet we will never be a traditional publisher because you automatically cannot be if the author pays. And we're not striving to be, but we are absolutely striving to compete with our traditional counterparts.
So do you think in the model that you're undertaking, is the difference then, and this is a leading question, is the difference then only that the author pays or pays for the production of the book, or are there more differences?
I think so that difference is a big one, and the royalties also are attached to that. So in traditional publishing, the author would typically get 7.5% off of list, or I should use apples to apples, actually. So it's 15% of net, typically, on a print book, and we give our authors 60%. And then on ebooks, typically in the traditional world, authors get 25%, and we give 80%. So there's the money piece that is definitely different. The only other place that I would say that we're different is around our mission, in that we're not acquiring books that are based on the author's platform. We truly are acquiring books and vetting books. We have a submissions process that is about the quality of the writing. And so an unknown author who has a beautiful memoir or a beautiful novel actually can publish with us, whereas the doors to publishing are closed to those people. And it's very frustrating because they're getting what I call the glowing reviews, where people are like, I love this project. It's so beautiful. I'm sorry, we can't sell it. And authors are really frustrated by that kind of feedback because they know they have a good book and they sometimes then don't know where to go with that.
And are you able then, and I think that's a significant difference, it puts you more in the tradition of the literary publishers, the independent literary publishers who for many years, and I think some of the interviews and conversations I've had with people who have been involved in publishing over the last 50 years are that kind of publisher. They are literary because the work is what matters first. Whether their outlook is literary or not is partially, that's partially part of the definition. But really, it's about the work and the quality being primary. And in those cases, it's not that they're non-commercial, although in some cases they were or are, but that the focus is on whether the book is good or not. And then you decide how to market it based on, whatever you can do. But so when you talk to authors, you're having the conversation about publishing their book, and you say, we really like your book. We think it is publishable. It's a good book. One of the next questions after all of the questions about how will you publish it and what will it look like and all of those things, I would imagine would be, okay, so what will you do to sell my book even though, you know, the commercial publisher may not take me at all, but those publishers are fairly large. They have really, you know, they have standing with reviewers. They are able to get into bookstores perhaps on a, you know, more or less automatic basis. You know, can you, what do you do that's different than for the author in terms of putting the book out into the world? Are you being more focused? Are you, you know, do you treat the book differently? And do you involve the author in different ways than perhaps a traditional commercial publisher would do?
So, yeah. And there's, so there's a lot in there that I'm going to just take a second to unpack because, no, it's great. It's great. But I want to start by saying that I come out of an indie tradition. I come out of North Atlantic Books and I come out of Seal Press, and both presses, the former being owned by a husband and wife and the latter, you know, having a tremendous independent spirit, was always about the literary quality of the book and about whether the book fit the list and about the merits of the book. And so that was how I was trained from an editorial standpoint. And so now in big publishing, what you see is that these decisions around acquisitions are so largely marketing driven, and you're trained as an acquisitions editor today. And I got this training toward my latter years in at Seal to look at the marketing pieces first. I used to get a proposal and read the editorial piece. And then as I was, you know, as we got more pressure to publish or acquire these bigger books, my whole strategy toward proposals changed. I started looking at the marketing and looking at who the author was and did they have a TED Talk and a million other qualifiers. So that was really important to me. And I just want to state that because I feel like I grew up in this totally different environment than what big publishing is today. And small presses have sort of had to adhere to that necessarily because it's so competitive and because of the consolidation in publishing. So obviously traditional presses do bring traditional publicity plans to books, but as many of us know who are in the industry, and you know, and authors are certainly aware of this, some to more of a degree than others, is that those marketing plans are usually reserved for the biggest projects. And so when I was leaving Seal, there were some authors who were getting $500 allocated to their marketing plans. And that is a huge problem because the authors aren't aware. You know, they think they're getting a marketing and publicity plan, but they don't know if it's 10 grand or $500. And so one of the things that I advocate for, and I have a new book coming out this month, I really am advocating for transparency in the industry. I think everybody would be a lot happier if they knew where they stood. And so at She Writes Press, we have traditional distribution and we do market our list, and it's the distribution that allows the books to get into the marketplace, to be pre-sold, to have these channels open. But we don't, our package that we sell, sort of the base level package, doesn't include a publicity plan. And so we do encourage our authors to hire a publicist, and that can, it would be an outside publicist. But it's also not a prerequisite of publishing with us. And I explain to the authors that if you don't have a publicity plan, in all likelihood, your book is not going to get out there in a big way and it's not going to sell through. And if you do have a bigger plan, then you can get into the markets and in all likelihood, it will have a better sell-through rate. So I spend a lot of time on author education, and B, I think our model is really about opening up opportunities and giving authors a chance to actually play in the sandbox with their traditional counterpoints, and whether that is because they're entrepreneurial and they want to see how that goes, or because they have the eventual dream of traditional publishing. My whole mission for the press is really more about offering opportunities, and authors can sort of make what they will of that within our model.
Got it. So what do you do to, now let's say you get these thousands of manuscripts. What's your review process like? Are you, obviously, I doubt that you're reading every single one of those. You must have a staff. So, but every book is read completely, or every book you start to read and see how it is before you, you know, can you make decisions before you read the whole book? Let's put it that way.
I mean, that's typically how traditional publishing makes decisions. I used to acquire books on proposal. So that's another tradition that I come out of, right? You would make a decision based on the sample chapters and other aspects of the book. And so what we do is we put authors on a track, 1, 2, or 3. 1 means we think it's publish ready. 2 means we think it needs a copy edit. And 3 means it's really not ready. You know, it needs either development or coaching, or you might need to reconsider what you're doing. So we of course have a somewhat of a stopgap in place there, because we do have proofreading as part of our package. And so if an author qualifies for track 1 and it turns out that their first 20 or 30 pages were perfect because they had been, you know, overly edited, and then the rest of the book kind of falls apart, we reserve the right to go back to the author and discuss that. But that is how we handle it. And yes, I do have staff people who are reading the projects. We assess every single project, and we give the authors a written page about what's working, what's not working, and then also what track we put them on.
Do you charge for the initial read, or is that, you know, like you'll read anything and respond to anything?
It's $25, and we ask for, I'd have to check the most recent update on this, but I think it's for 30 pages. And so, you know, interestingly, that has been completely fine. I mean, there's no money made on that. We give that $25 to the readers.
Right.
They're contract employees, actually, and they happen to all be agents. They're friends and connections of mine. And so that has worked really well, because agents know what's good. There are agents who want to make a little bit of money on the side, and I love that aspect of the relationship. But it's helpful, because they're invested then in giving a real assessment. But of course, it's an incredible deal to the authors.
Oh no, that's a great deal. Well, do you have any? But has anybody who's any agent read a book as part of that process and said to you, I want this book, I want to represent it?
It's happened twice. And it's very funny, because we've had to have this conversation in which, you know, this is two separate agents said, wow, if she doesn't end up publishing with She Writes Press, I want to represent her. And so it's a little bit of a, how do we handle that? And it's been a conversation that I've had to have with the agents. But yeah, it is, you know, that can certainly happen. And we broach it on a case-by-case basis.
Right. Well, I don't want to get too much into the nuts and bolts, although I think they're interesting because just to see how a company will operate in this model, I think is actually useful to know. So let's assume, you know, and clearly there are, the stratification means that if a book is in level 3 where it needs work, you know, you might then go back to the author and say, you need to hire. Now, do you then offer the editorial services that book will need, and then spend the time? Obviously, it could take a while, but you bring them an editor.
Exactly. We'll partner them with an editor, and that's not required. So they certainly can talk to people. I mean, when it's the developmental level, it's a coaching relationship. And so that has to be a good fit for the author. And we have a whole bunch of coaches that are listed on our website. So sometimes the author picks their coach, sometimes I assign the coach. And then that relationship, I mean, I'm very much about everybody going into this relationship feeling empowered, because one of the things that I especially dislike about some of the self-publishing companies that are around is there's a lot of upselling, a lot of taking advantage of authors. You need this, that, and the other. And that's just not how we work. We want the authors to feel like they're being held in a process, and that they realize the value of what we're giving them.
And I assume you also want to calibrate their expectations so that they are not, because you know many authors have unrealistic expectations. They don't know the process, and they don't necessarily know how publishing works. And being, you know, working with a publisher is one of the ways that a publisher learns how things work. I mean, how an author learns how things work. So presumably you would be working with them on expectations and helping them understand the process, how long it will take, how much work is involved, you know, and what will happen once their manuscript is actually completed.
That's really an important part of what we do. And I host a monthly author call for each list. So the spring authors, the fall authors, and they have a monthly call that starts from when they get onboarded and ends at the point of post-publication. So that's a monthly call for a year for most of those authors. And then I host office hours as well once a week where I'm available for anyone to call in and ask questions. So we really focus on both transparency and author education, and part of author education does involve managing expectations. Because I completely agree with you that, I mean, it's amazing to me that on average, if you ask an author, I mean, this is in my experience, how many books do you think that you can sell? They will typically put a number of about 10,000 on that, just based on nothing. And as you and I know, that's an incredibly difficult number to hit. And in fact, at this point in today's industry, is probably like a best-selling number. So I want people to understand what they're getting into, and you know what is typical for us, and where their earnout is, and what all of that is, so that they are not disappointed later.
Right, and presumably also, again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you tell them what the risk is that you know, even though everyone will put in best efforts, the book will be done as well as possible. You're going to publish it and get it out there. There's no guarantee that anybody will ever buy the book.
Yeah, I have to, because the authors are investing in themselves, and when authors put money toward their own project, there's a lot of emotion on the line.
Yeah. No, that's true. Well, speaking of that, one thing I know is very important to authors, all that, and you hear it all the time, is how their book looks. You know that in traditional publishing, the decision about the cover is finally in the hands of the publishing company. And some publishers ask authors, you know, what did you have in mind, or did you have a vision for your cover? But in the end, the you know, a traditional publisher will make that decision without consulting with or asking the permission of the author. Sometimes, you know, authors are not happy about that. The decisions are commercially driven, or they're made by people who have less involvement with the actual story than they do, but perhaps who know quite a bit about, you know, what a book cover should look like. But in your case, how do you handle issue of cover and book design, for that matter, you know, typography and interior design? Is that you tell what do you tell the author, and how do you handle that kind of aesthetic decision?
Luckily, interior design is so much easier than cover design in terms of just getting sign off from the authors. I think that we have really strong interiors. They're not templated. They're designed, each one, by professional designers, and they always look great. So thank goodness for that, because the cover design, of course, as anyone who has ever worked in publishing or published a book knows, it doesn't always go that smoothly. And we do a cover memo, which was exactly what we always did at Seal Press. And so I just, you know, adopted that as a process. We need to have author buy-in, of course, and they do get to have veto power, and we want them to be in love with their books. And sometimes it's difficult. And I have had to have really hard conversations with authors sometimes. I think that you know, one of the difficult aspects of our model, having come out of traditional publishing, is that, of course, when you're a publisher who is paying an author, you have that leverage to say, okay, look, well, we bought your book and we know what's best. But there is a kind of paternal, you were in Seal Press's case, maternal way of going about that. And we don't have that, you know, and I sometimes I miss it. On the other hand, I also think it's very empowering to the authors. And I also try to say, look, we have the industry expertise. And sometimes I really have to veto their covers. Sometimes they want to design their own covers. And unfortunately, cover design is so complex, because authors are often drawn to things that don't make a good cover.
Yeah, no, and in a way, it is a really tough dynamic, because they're your client. You know, that you have to make your client happy, but they're also paying you for your expertise and for your knowledge and for your skills. So, you know, and the experience that you have in publishing is valuable. So when you tell, I mean, it's obviously it's complicated because people who are often, when you're so involved in the book that you just wrote and you have so much invested in it personally, as you said before, it's an emotional thing, can be very stressful when someone even that you respect tells you that your idea is wrong.
That's exactly.
It's hard. And sometimes I know that authors will say in that case, well, look, I'm paying for this. I want this cover, you know, and if it doesn't work, that's on me because mm-hmm. I said, I want you to do it this way. But of course, your name is on the book. She Writes Press is the publisher. And so you have to also balance that with your own feelings and your own sensibility of what you want to have connected to you. Because it's not just the author's reputation at stake, it's your own.
Yeah, exactly. That's very well articulated because I have struggled with that. And there have been times when certain people on our team have been like, let's please just let this go because the author is fighting us tooth and nail and we're not happy. And there's been at least three instances where I was like, no, because I cannot have the cover that they want be a She Writes Press book.
Right.
And so we have our own standards, our own reputation, and our own integrity. And luckily, in all of those cases, the authors were like, okay, let's meet somewhere in the middle. We had to restart to be able to find a place that we could meet a mutual ground. The good news for where we are now, because we have so many books under our belt and we have award-winning books and these gorgeous covers, is that I get to say, look at our backlist. You know, it speaks for itself. And thank God for that, because in the beginning, it was a lot harder than it is now to just point to it and say, we do good covers. You can trust us. And we also have gotten feedback, which is amazing, from buyers, you know, that just say we're doing some of the best covers in all publishing, in independent publishing in general, not just hybrid. So I'm very proud of that.
No, I think that's good. Well, but it's still, I bet it never will end, no matter how. No, it can't. Although I do think you're right in a way. I think the more books you publish, the more you establish an identity and an aesthetic. It's sort of like if I'm an author, now this is just all imaginary, but if I'm an author and I'm looking which publisher does books that I like, that helps. You know, in other words, if somebody comes to you because they've seen your books, they like your covers, it's much more likely that they will abide by your design instead of trying to override you because you, in fact, they came to you because of your established identity, you know, the aesthetic identity that you've created. So that makes sense that the more books you have, the more likely it is that authors will, you and authors will be collaborating in a way that fits your model.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the reasons we've been successful because the books speak for themselves and because our authors are really smart and savvy and they are fantastic writers and they're ambassadors for us out in the world. So we're incredibly community driven and the authors all know each other. There's a private Facebook group and they all connect with one another. And it's, you know, as the publisher, sometimes I'm like, oh my goodness, what have I created? But it's also, it's amazing to watch the alliances that happen and how they support one another. And it's been really gratifying.
No, that's a really powerful thing. I think the network effect of your authors being able to work together. And I think, you know, as you talked about earlier, transparency in that way, in traditional publishing, there is no real effort made to communicate among the authors of a publishing company. I think that's just an alien idea model.
In fact, they would try to obstruct that. It's so counter to how controlling the traditional publishers want to be for a lot of reasons that make sense around just management. But that is absolutely my experience that, you know, even really great open publishers and editors, they're not at all interested in having their authors talk to one another. You know, because they just want it to go smoothly, and they kind of want to be, like I was saying, it is much more paternalistic. It's just like, we know what's best. We're going to tell you what to do. You're going to agree with us, and we have it all figured out. But and this goes more into industry critiquing, but it's hugely problematic because these authors that I worked with over the years, they don't know what's going on. And many of them have the capacity, the finances, you know, whatever, to hire their own publicists, for instance. But even hiring your own publicist, some traditional publishers are resistant to that. More and more, I think they're open to working with outside publicists than they ever have been because they realize the benefit of it. But there is this very strong desire to control the process, and then therefore they think they're controlling the outcome. But, you know, I'm not sure that's true.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that traditionally, with many publishers, not all, but many of the publishers have been not very effective at giving the author any kind of power, including marketing power. I do think your observation and mine coincide, and that is today more often publishers are recognizing the value of having, I mean, it is sort of cynical, but because they can't provide the resources to promote the books that they're publishing, if authors can, it's better for them. I mean, as simple as, you know, simple terms, if an author is willing to pay for marketing, that publishers are going to benefit from that. And, you know, you could then question from an author's point of view, if you're only making, you know, the traditional royalty rate, why would you pay 100% of the marketing cost if you're only getting back 15% of the revenue? So, you know, that kind of calls into question the entire relationship and kind of feeds your model handily, because, you know, if authors are going to be paying more of the cost, they ought to be getting more of the revenue. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately, you know, the commercial publishers run a risk in ceding territory in a way to authors. If authors can't rely on publishers to do the publishing job, then it kind of leads inexorably to the notion that authors can become publishers, which, you know, you're helping them to do.
Yeah, exactly. And all very good observations. And I think one of the things that I witness so often is a lot of authors coming to us very disillusioned with the traditional industry, and it makes sense. I mean, it's not just about having been rejected. It's poor experiences with previously published books. It is, you know, having had a conversation with an agent or an editor in which, you know, they're saying in essence, like, well, we're going to leverage your contacts, or we're going to, you know, we don't really have a plan. And so I think there's just been a lot of experiences with authors where they're saying, okay, look, it used to be the case that traditional publishers had the corner on this and you couldn't get published on your own. But so many people, you know, whether they're entrepreneurial or not, they want control in that process. And they're starting to question, well, wait a second, why do I have to be in this paternalistic relationship? You know, why don't I get to have more creative say on about my own project? And I think those are really valid questions from a creative standpoint, and this sort of disdain that the traditional publishing industry can sort of have sometimes for its own authors. And that's a problematic dynamic that I think traditional publishing needs to solve if it wants to continue to retain its best people.
Well, that kind of leads to another question. And do you foresee that authors who have been published commercially, not just, you know, so that you would get more of the people you were just describing, you know, people who have, they may have had a good experience or a bad experience, but they may be rethinking the publishing model. And is it, you know, are they likely or more likely, or are you hoping that they're going to come to you and publishers like you who are doing things differently? Because, you know, I could see there's an emotional and kind of psychic power to the notion of authors being empowered. Mm-hmm. And that is important to authors, you know, not just money, not just success, but also that feeling that someone believes in their work. And even though you might not be paying for that work to be published, you're not expressing the belief in the work by financing the publishing, but you're expressing the belief in the work by collaborating with the author and fulfilling their vision.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge asset that we bring because there is validation built into our model. But your question is interesting. I mean, I actually think that people who have been traditionally published before are more likely to strike out and do hybrid or variations on self-publishing because they've tasted the wine. You know, it's like, all right, that's great. And I can do exactly that over here. And so sometimes those people tend to have a more indie spirit. I mean, it just depends, of course, because everyone is different. But the industry is definitely at risk. I mean, the traditional industry is at risk of losing people because of the way that they make their decisions. And they're not really wanting to cultivate authors over the long run. And we've had a couple of authors on our lists who, basically they lost their relationship with their publisher for one reason or another. So that is interesting because they're kind of like, well, why? What's changed? And again, it's not about the book. It's that they don't have a certain something. And that is frustrating. And you never know. I mean, especially if someone has a legacy. I mean, we have several authors who were previously best-selling authors with their previous books, and the publishers didn't want to publish their next book.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot over the last 10 years. That, I mean, there are two things, two dynamics at least going on there. One is the change in the demographics, and also the change in the demographics of editors. And that is that if the older editors are not in the business anymore, then the older writers that they worked with don't have their contacts anymore.
Yeah.
And whether the books, you know, it is possible also that the books are, you know, that those the writers who have been successful in the past, the audience may have changed as well. It's certainly possible that, you know, the books wouldn't sell sufficiently anymore. I mean, those things have also happened. But it does seem that there are a considerable number of writers who have had success in the past who are looking for a publisher now. And of course, that's good for you because they have name recognition and at least some people who have read their books before.
Yeah, exactly. And it's good for us too because of our access to traditional distribution, because that's another piece that the self-publishing community doesn't have, and that is a pain point. And I think this will get solved at some point. Someone somewhere is going to come around and be like, oh, we're actually going to offer a better solution to your distribution problems. But right now, the solutions that exist through Ingram Spark and CreateSpace are just decent. They're not getting people where they want the books to be.
Well, yeah, they're more structural than active. Let's put it, they give you the opportunity to have your books in stores, but they don't there's no mechanism for that actually to occur. There's no sales force for the books that are being published by Ingram Spark, for example.
Yeah, and the bookstores often just don't want to deal with it.
Right. And, well, and also Ingram Spark does not have what you have, which is the filtration of editorial review. You know, if yeah. Those are more platforms for publishing without regard to the quality of the work, which means that from a sales point of view, there is no filter applied, and that makes it more difficult. You know, if you're a bookseller, a library, a wholesaler, it's really hard to say, well, there's this, you know, a flood. I mean, it's a, you know, like the largest pipe possible producing books. How do you, you know, you can't stand in front of that and even figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
So you do need to have the whole system of publishing and distribution is based on a curatorial and selectivity process. Otherwise, it's very difficult to figure out what's good and what's bad. You know, everybody wants a publisher to do that for them.
Yeah, Yeah. And I think that is the thing that, of course, differentiates us and where the hybrid models are emerging and having success, because there is a curation process going on. And it is fundamental, because unfortunately, there's just so many self-published authors who are publishing before they're ready. They don't know what they don't know. They're continuing to make huge mistakes. But there are so many self-published authors who are doing a great job. And so all those people who are kind of like, I want to set myself apart, are looking for different solutions.
So I know there are many things we could talk about, but you don't have unlimited time. So one other thing I wanted to ask you about is this, something I'm interested in, and that is, do you think that, you know, since we're talking about distribution, that is there an opportunity for self-publishing or hybrid publishing authors like the ones that you work with? Is there an opportunity for you to figure out different ways of selling the books? And I mean, there are only so many bookstores. You know, there may be 1,000 bookstores in America. That's not very much shelf space. There's Barnes & Noble, but as you know, that's a declining shelf space as well. How do you solve, what is the solution for, we do have an overabundance of supply. You know, there's no question. There are more books written, more books published than any system could ever absorb. But, is there an alternative out there? Is there as some people have talked about, a way for books to be sold through Facebook, do you consider that a viable thing? Is that something you think about? How could we find different ways of selling books these are good books, they're books we believe in, there are authors who are working hard on them. How do we find readers for them outside of the existing sales mechanism? Distribution mechanism, retailing mechanism.
Yeah. I mean, I spend time thinking about this, and I think every author needs to spend time thinking about this, and direct sales are a big piece of how our authors are getting out into the world. Many of them have relationships or speaking opportunities. And the great thing about our model is that because the authors are paying for their print runs, once they own those print runs, they own their books. We're not selling their books back to them at 50%. They're taking their books at cost. And so let's say that cost is like $2 a book if they're printing 1,000 on an offset printer. And so it's been a great opportunity for those authors, because they then can take that 100 books and they go to, like we have a woman whose novel, central to her novel is horse jumping. And so she has this opportunity to go up to Canada for this huge horse jumping show, and she's taking 100 books. And the hard thing about this is that if the author is selling directly, they actually have to be a good salesperson. And I don't think it's the only way, but many of our authors have pushed many, many books directly by fundamentally understanding their niche readership. And then this conversation is huge. I mean, you could have a whole conversation on just this, like how to get direct sales and different mechanisms. But I think the key is something you actually alluded to earlier, which is not passivity, but activity, because there's tons of like direct mail opportunities and catalogs that you can be in. But if it's just passive, well, you're getting eyes on those projects, but it's not the same as engaging people in conversation around the central passion of the book or the topic or the issue that's at the heart of the book that people are really going to want to read about because they share a love of, or an interest or a connection.
No, I think you're right. I'm kind of thinking that it might be a really good panel to have at a book expo or something like that, to talk about how how authors actually can sell books.
Yeah. Well, and these conversations are happening. Like, I'm part of the Independent Book Publishers Association, and we have these conversations. I mean, I'm not sure if there was a specific panel to this last year, but at Publishers University every year, these kinds of conversations are huge, but they're driven by positioning. And so authors have to really understand their positioning and exactly who they want to sell to and who they're appealing to. And so many authors still are in this place of like, oh, it's for all women. They don't really even understand the issues at the core of their books that are going to translate into sales. And they're still, doing the sort of spaghetti approach. So there's so much to learn and to immerse yourself in. And some people have the bandwidth and the capacity for that. And then others I've just witnessed, no matter how many times you try to talk them through that, they just don't.
Right. Well, it is also true, almost by definition, that many, many authors are not the kinds of people who are interested in or necessarily good at direct-to-consumer selling. I mean, that's actually probably something that a minority of people in general are good at, much less, you know, authors.
Yeah, and that's an absolutely excellent point. And I think it's one of the things that I see authors feeling frustrated about with platform is that they don't want to do it. They don't want to be out in that way. And authors increasingly don't like what's required of them to become an author. But, you know, it's interesting thing, you know, as we're kind of critiquing or as I'm critiquing the traditional industry, I mean, that's what the traditional industry has seen is that these people have to be out and, you know, talking and attending conferences because that's the only thing that sells books anymore.
Right. But it is paradoxical because the thing that is, you know, that makes books sell the best is a particular type of activity that I would say in general is not a commonly held skill set.
Yeah.
Or predilection. Touch. Right. It's very tough.
Yeah.
I think we could talk for a lot longer. I think you have, you know, we've come to the end point for you because you've got to go on to a meeting. But I really appreciate your taking the time and it was really fun talking to you. I also will mention that you have a book coming or that is just out called Greenlight Your Book, which is a guide to the book industry. So if you're listening to this conversation and you want to go further with Brooke's ideas, that's a book that you should look for.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brooke. This has been Publishing Talks, a podcast about books in the publishing industry. I've been talking to Brooke Warner, the publisher of She Writes Press, and also the president of Warner Coaching and author of Greenlight Your Book. Thanks so much.